Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. When Colleen Globke adopted her first child, few resources existed for adoptive families. Since then, she's founded her own adoption agency called All About You Adoptions. As we talk about adoption today, we wanted to get beyond the politics of legislation and learn more about what adoption actually looks like in South Dakota, from the 2 a.m. crisis phone call to helping families find success and attachment in the days following adoption. Colleen has seen it all. I'm curious how you came to this work personally, and how long have you been doing it, and what sort of drew you to work with adoptive families?
The agency was founded, I'm one of the founders, and we started the agency in 2006, and it grew from an adoptive parent support group that had formed by adoptive parents, and I was an adoptive parent, so my children are 21 and 18, so I was first an adoptive parent who got involved with this parent support group, and as a result of this parent support group and some of the things that we were hearing, we decided that South Dakota needed to expand and have another option for an agency, and so that's why the agency began.
So what kind of work do you do? What sort of expansion, filled a need that maybe wasn't met here before?
First of all, we do 24-hour service. Our phones are answered 24 hours a day. If we have a birth parent in crisis at 2 in the morning, they're going to get a live person. They're going to get me when they make that call to talk to them about a crisis. If an adoptive family has a crisis, they can call us at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's less likely that you're going to have an adoptive family have a 2 in the morning crisis than a birth parent. But we do that. So that's one thing that makes us unique is 24/7 service. We also do very personalized service with our adoptive parent training. Our training, we don't want families to have to take off time from work to go do their training. We want them to be able to save that time for when their child comes home with them. And so our training is individualized. We've developed our own curriculum. So families, there's 6 different training areas, which would be the same for any agency in the state. And our families have some items in each of those 6 areas that are required, but then they also have a lot of flexibility within those areas where they can pick and choose topics that are specific to their family. So if we know a family is interested in adopting transracially, they can do extra studies on transracial adoption. Or if we have an adoptive mom who wants to try breastfeeding, she can read up on how to be successful at that. We also have a lot of children's books where families can read those children's books and pick ones that they think might be relevant once they're home with their child. And it gives them a chance to read all those books and not have to buy them until they know which ones are going to work for their particular situation. So by doing that, we have them do online things. There's books and videos and interactive, just different interactive things. They complete study guides for each part of the training. They do interviews with other adoptive families. And it's really a unique way to learn because it hits all different learning styles, but it also makes it very individualized per family. It's not just a blanket training.
Right. I'm guessing that when you adopted your children more than 2 decades ago, you didn't have quite the same resources getting started.
No. In fact, we were told your African-American children are the same as raising any other child. Just go home and love them. Well, uh-huh. 21 years of education later, that is definitely not the case.
All right. What do you wish you knew back then that you know now? What would you like to have told yourself as a new mom then?
Things that are specific to the culture, the heritage of the child. Mm-hmm. I wish I would have known a lot more about that. I wish I would have known a lot more about handling racism, handling those crazy things that people say to adoptive parents that they wouldn't even dream of saying to someone who had given birth to a child. I wish I knew more about the importance of medical history in the birth family. All of those things. And probably the biggest one, though, attachment. Attachment and bonding. That was not something that we knew a whole lot about at that point. And now we do an immense amount of training with our families on attachment and bonding.
So the
that is so important.
Yeah, what are the challenges to attachment and bonding in an adoptive family relationship? I'm familiar with it. When my daughter was born, it was kind of something that was new being talked about then for families who had just had an infant. What about for adopted families?
Well, when you're pregnant, you have 9 months to bond with your baby. Mm-hmm. Your baby hears your voice. Your baby gets used to noises that are around you. When a child is adopted, adoption in and of itself is a trauma. Even if they are adopted when they are 12 hours old, that's still a trauma because they are being removed from what has been their normal, the sounds, the voices, those type of things. And they're having to hear new voices and new sounds and new smells and the trauma of birth itself.
Sure.
And then, you know, connecting to the adoptive parents. They need to establish those bonds and we have a lot of different ways that we teach our adoptive families to promote bonding and attachment. But one of them is to not have a whole bunch of people holding your baby right away. Mm. You need to go home with your baby. You need to close your doors. You need to not let anybody in the house. And you need to just be hermits for about a month because baby needs to get to know you as the parent. With what's your normal? Because if baby comes home and is passed around to every grandma and grandpa and uncle and cousin that comes through the door,
sure.
Baby doesn't know who mom and dad are. So they need to secure those bonds before they're being introduced to a lot of other people. I'm not very popular with many grandmothers because I tell them you can only hold baby when baby is sleeping and you can't feed baby and all those important attachment things have to be done by mommies and daddies.
Right. So simple, but so smart. And yeah.
Right, right. It seems like a no-brainer kind of thing. But, you know, I think back to when I brought my first child home, the first thing we did was stop and see all the grandparents and pass the baby around. And that was the worst possible thing we could have done. But I wish I knew then what I know now.
So I'm also curious to jump back a little bit to something you said earlier in our conversation, and that's the 2 a.m. Phone call. From a birth parent, what kinds of crises are birth parents having at 2 a.m. that what are the themes that they need to be walked through?
2 a.m. calls could be, I think I'm in labor, because that's one of the other things that we do. When a mom's in labor, we are at the hospital with her from the first moment she wants us to be there until she tells us she's ready for us to leave.
Okay.
So if that means staying with her completely till she discharges from the hospital, we do. We've slept on hospital floors before. We've slept in, you know, all kinds of strange places. So it might be that. It might be a domestic violence situation. It might be, I mean, there's so many different things that it could be.
And that's probably evolved a great amount as well over the past two decades, the kind of pre-adoption support.
And I have also had calls at 3 in the morning from someone who's just considering adoption, but that's the time they're online and found my phone number, and they want somebody to talk to because that's the moment they're thinking about adoption. Mm. So I'm waking myself up at 3 a.m. and talking to them about that.
Are families who are seeking to adopt and families or mothers who are seeking to give a baby to an adoptive family, are they the same as they are throughout history? Do the reasons and the motivations change as well?
You know, I'm not sure that I've necessarily seen a lot of change in the reasons for choosing adoption. The majority of the reasons that I hear are I want a different life for my child than I can provide. I'm not at a place in my life where things are stable, or I don't have a job, or, you know, I don't have a good place to live. Most of the birth parents that I work with have other children. They know how tough it is to be a parent, and they know that parenting another child in their situation would just cause that much more stress for themselves and their other kids.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of people think about those who choose adoption for their child as being a teenager that just, you know, made a mistake and got pregnant and, that's not the case. We've done, I don't know, somewhere between 160 and 170 adoptions, and only 5 of them have ever been teenagers.
Really?
So the majority, like I said, is those moms who have other kids. They know how tough it is.
And how about the families that are seeking to adopt? Oh, similar themes there as well? Or has that changed as people learn more and bust through some of those myths of adoption?
I think one thing that maybe is different is that people are adopting at an older age because people are waiting to start their families later. And when they're waiting to start their families later, a lot of times, it's not as easy to get pregnant. And so that leads more families to adoption. Beyond that, I don't know if I've seen a lot of other differences.
Sure. Let's talk about how things have evolved with sort of helping families become successful. How important is the support that the birth parents and the adoptive parents need in their lives to really make this the best for the child and for all the families involved?
Okay, so I've kind of explained our training process and helping families walk through that whole situation and getting them ready, because being prepared is incredibly important. We don't want anybody to not have a successful adoption because they come in with preconceived ideas that, you know, or expectations that we're not able to meet. After placement, we basically tell families, birth families and adoptive families, that we are a resource for them for as long as they need. And that could be with birth families. A lot of times a birthday is a tough day, so we're there to talk to them about that, counsel them through that. We also connect them to other outside resources if they feel they need it. For adoptive families, we also provide those long-term services. So we have a lot of adoptive family events, like a yearly picnic. We have an event every year in the spring called Beyond Gotcha Day, which is an educational event. Families can get together, learn more about different topics. They can also network with each other, talk to other families that are going through similar things. It's just a really great event. And then we have a Facebook group. It's just for families, where they can talk about things that they're going through. And that's really cool because it's 24/7.
Right.
They don't have to wait for some events to take place. They can hop on at 3 a.m. if they're having a crisis and they don't want to call us. And there might be another adoptive parent on at that point that they can visit with.
Right. Let's just finish up with, something about really the impact of adoption on South Dakota. What, you know, the sort of successful transition, you know, from a birth mom who says, I want something, you know, for my child that I can't provide, to a family that brings somebody into their home and adopts them as their own. What's the impact on our society overall in the state? Do you think of it being done right and done really well?
You know, I think the majority of the adoptions that are done statewide do have some level of openness, and there is ongoing contact in most cases between birth parents and adoptive parents, and that is a really healthy situation for all parties involved, but especially for the child. Occasionally, there's a situation where people don't want to have contact, and that's okay. Of course, we're going to be respectful of that. There are wishes there as well. But I think that is a really positive change. And from that angle, I guess, you know, my kids being 21 and 18, that's one thing. We were really on the pioneering end of the open adoption thing. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it be a very healthy, very healthy situation. And I think that's a really positive trend.
That's Colleen Globke of All About You Adoption Agency in Sioux Falls. Patrick Hicks is an author and a poet. He's writer in residence at Augustana University. His most recent poetry collection is called Adoptable. Hicks and his wife adopted a son from the Republic of Korea. When He Is an Old Man is one of my favorite Patrick Hicks poems. Here's the author reading for you now.
Long after my body has been turned into ash and his own children have walked into middle age, they will eventually gather around his hospital bed. My son, an old man with papery skin, will be hooked up to an octopus of machines. Tubes will push fluid into his body, his rib cage will rise and fall, his heart will blip. He might be scared, but also content with the arc and burn of his life. I will stand at the foot of his bed, just as I did when he was a baby, watching him breathe. As nurses rush in for his final moments, I'd like to put my cool hand on his cheek and whisper into his ear that his daddy still loves him. If there is another life, I'll be waiting for him, just as I did at the Omaha airport when we first met. I'll be the one craning my neck at the new arrivals, waving my hands like crazy, ecstatic at last to welcome him home.
That's poet Patrick Hicks. We want to hear your stories of adoption. Send me an email, inthemoment@sdpb.org. We'll take a break. Stay in the moment on listener-supported SDPB Radio.